Welcome. Another episode of the Sunday Puncher podcast. I'm your host, Angelo, and I got Lex here with me. Lex, you know why I'm laughing.
I know why you're laughing.
So we got to address it right now. On our last episode, we did a post-fight breakdown, etc., about the Tank Santa Cruz fight, and granted, there was five of us on the podcast, and we were all hyped up, and we were all in the wake of literally the, you know, 30 minutes had passed after the conclusion of Davis versus Santa Cruz, and you said something that made a lot of people mad. Okay, actually, okay, hold on. Before I create a straw man here, this is not good. You made a couple of people not so happy. And not only that, you created a pretty large debate, and I heard you were going to apologize.
Oh, apology? Ooh, that's so tricky. Can we say clarify? Would that be fair?
Fine. Before you clarify or apologize, I don't know. Let's say what you said was, and I'm going to paraphrase. I probably should have had the clip queued up, but I'm just going to say, you basically made this argument, which I don't agree with, by the way, but I get your point. Now, that's the thing that, you know, is missing in a lot of debate online. There's really no room for nuance. And you said that Naoya Inoue is not must-watch TV. And you framed it as in when you talk to your casual fans, your general sports fans who are your friends that don't watch boxing. But if you tell them like there's something big going on, they may check in. They may come over to watch. That Inoue was never going to be one of those guys, and you were asserting that he would never be that for anybody else. Like, he wouldn't fit into the handful of fights that you recommend over the course of a year to your, you know, your NBA friends that they should watch. Now, did I mischaracterize what you said or what you meant? I may have made the argument better than you did.
You did a good job of, you know, summarizing what I said. I think the quote was unfairly clipped because, like you mentioned, we were in the aftermath of the Tank knockout. And, you know, because five people are on the podcast, you know, I said something really quickly. I didn't get to like key in on it or expand on it. We moved on to the next topic. So I shout to you for giving me the opportunity to clarify. And like you said, yes, you know, in my mind, this isn't about region, like location, Japan, Russia, America, UK, whatever. At the end of the day, for my circle of friends, you know, a lot of these guys have jobs, kids, so big social lives. I live in New York City, okay, people? So Saturday night is like a big thing. You work all week.
Not anymore. You ain't out there trying to get COVID, are you?
I don't even leave my house unless it's for the supermarket. Now, with that said, pre-pandemic, you might want to go to a club. You might want to go date a girl. You might want to go see the movies. You might want to go to the hookah lounge. You might want to go up down to Dykeman. There's a lot of cool stuff going on in a big, busy city like New York, especially if you have a significant other or children. So convincing my circle of friends to watch Inoue, it's not the easiest sell. Now, to compare, I was trying to sell my same group of friends on the Charlotte doubleheader. You know what they told me? I'm not watching it. So this has nothing to do. And I, you know, sure, there's a difference. I did try to tell them about the Charlos and not Inoue.
I guess the point is, like, there are certain guys that you'll try and certain guys you won't. And I guess what you mean is Inoue is,
yeah, and so
by the way, it's not Inoue. I don't know.
I'm trying.
It's not, this isn't a city in Vietnam. It's Inoue. in a way, you're wrong.
Inoue. Okay, Inoue. I like that. Inoue.
No, I mean, I get what you mean. I totally get what you mean. I have casual boxing fan friends that they don't care about certain fighters. I remember, I'm like, look, there's this cruiserweight guy coming up. HBO's going to have him. This guy is very talented. You're going to want to watch this guy fight. Ooh, Rollins just suggested a really interesting fight. Stan Jonas versus Hooker. Hmm. We're recording after the Stan Jonas card. We talked about that card on our Patreon episode that we just did. Now we're doing this full-length episode, and Rollins is recommending Stan Jonas versus Hooker. That's good. But anyway,
good luck getting Bomack to accept that one.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I mean, look, in a way is must watch for boxing fans. I think if you like to see demo jobs, in a way is one of your guys. Put him on the list. Because don't matter who they put in the ring with him, I don't think at the weight class there's anybody really that's going to provide much of much opposition. Certainly not of the guys available for him to fight at 118, you know, with a relationship with Top Rank. By the way, I know everyone loves Sean Gibbons. I know everyone likes Casimiro. I know he called, I think he said fuck you to Inoue or something like that at the press conference.
Called him the Japanese turtle.
He keeps calling him a turtle. I don't get it, but okay.
I like it. I like it. Like that was very funny.
It's cute.
That was like a good. Yeah, it was cute.
It's cute, but like I'm here to tell you right now, Casemiro's getting knocked out by Inoue. Like I don't see him having a chance in that fight.
Yeah, I don't think he's measured enough and defensive enough to get it done. But you never know. But I would definitely, you know, if my money was on it, my money would definitely be on Inoue.
Like in a way, under four rounds is what I would say.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I feel like in a way is like he, you know, against Maloney, he like you know, in a way looked a lot more measured. He looked like he was showing some respect and trying to box and really almost like being a little cautious in there. And like I understand why he was doing that. You know, he's just coming off of a really tough fight with Donaire where he got his orbital bone broken. And like I imagine that he was like trying to be a little cautious with the test drive of being able to take punches. But Casemiro is the size of the guys that he was fighting when he was at 108. And he's going to treat though like Casemiro the same way he treated those guys, which is you're just going to get demolished. And in a way is like, you know, he's good with the fundamentals. Casemiro don't got that. Casemiro's going to wind up walking right into this because he thinks that he's this big, strong guy and he can lunge in with these crazy shots. I think Inoue makes quick work of him. Now, I don't want that to happen because I actually want a little longer of a reign with Casemiro because the guy's hilarious. But, you know, I totally get where you're coming from. And then the argument against you was like, in a way, is must-watch TV. And I think that if you put some nuance to it, it's like he's must-watch for certain people and he's not for others. And
I just would like to throw in that, like, I think he's a terrific fighter. He's a great fighter. And he can crack. Like, watching, for me, a hardcore boxing fan, watching someone like that is dope. I would never discourage any hardcore boxing fan to not watch him. He's dope. Go watch it. Anyway, he's excellent. Now, when I made the comment, it was for my super casual friends that most of the time they watch sports, it's LeBron.
Are you – did you mute yourself?
Like 4 to 6 boxing matches a year, that's not going to be the easiest sell. And, it has nothing to do with region. Now, for someone who watches a lot of boxing, like me and you and the rest of the people probably listening to this podcast, go watch him. You don't want to miss that show. He's dope.
Yeah.
Clear? Is that clear? Was that good?
I hope so. I get it. You know, there are a lot of fighters. I have a casual boxing fan. Like, I know how big a fight is when he asked me about it. He asked me about Teofimo. He asked me about Tank. And that's it. He didn't ask me about the Charlo fight. I anticipate he's going to ask about Spence. He did. He asked me. I saw him on Sunday, and he asked me about Wilder and Fury. But he don't ask me about, you know, champions, you know, like champions in the sport. Like, he's not going to ever ask me about, I don't think he's ever going to ask me about, I don't know, Josh Taylor and Jose Ramirez. He's not going to ask me probably about Plant and Benavidez. I think maybe in a year he will, but right now he's not at that level. I think hardcore fans, and if you're listening to this, there's a really good chance that you're a hardcore fan. And as much as we love the sport and like follow it so closely, like I think we give casuals way too much credit sometimes in terms of what how closely they follow the sport and what they're actually showing up to watch. It's not as much as we think. Like, you know, in boxing Twitter, everyone's going to be talking about Devin Haney's fight on Saturday night. Ain't nobody going to watch that. But it'll feel like a lot because it's all of us talking. But that's one of the issues that you have with an echo chamber, is that you think voices are a lot louder than they actually are.
I think something that gets lost in hardcore boxing fans' minds is, like, you know, the NBA has a finals every single year. The NFL has a Super Bowl every single year. There's a World Series every single year. We don't really have that in boxing. So when you have a fighter that doesn't have like a built-in narrative, like for 147, for example, at PBC, there's a pretty good narrative building. And you can even throw Bud Crawford into that, because maybe eventually Errol Spence and Bud face off. If a fighter doesn't have that, it's really hard, because there's no like, okay, now what? Okay, now what? Like Josh Taylor and Ramirez, you know, the hardcore boxing is waiting to see that. I'm waiting to see that. But before and after that, I'll watch, but I can't say I care as much as like 140, or I'm sorry, 147, or heavyweight, because there's a bit of a narrative there. Would you agree, or am I off?
I think I would say it like we had boxing holidays before, which we'll call those aligned with like a Super Bowl or something, and that was the September and the May date. Like, that's why Floyd's fights were so big, because everybody knew this is boxing weekend. Boxing doesn't have that. And I think, and I've always said this, part of the difficulty with following boxing for more casual fans is they don't know when to tune in. They don't know what's important. There's the consensus that so many fights are not good. They're not great value, and you don't need to tune in. And I don't think that will ever change. And I guess you could look at regular sports work this way too, like college football. College football, Alabama's games they do a good rating, but they don't do the same rating as a national title game. They don't do the same rating as some of the bigger bowl games. And while that may be Alabama playing all season long, all the way up until the national title game, why is a national title game the bigger game? Well, it's because people know this is the game that matters. And that's why they tune in. Look at MLB ratings. They're disastrous all season long. But when the playoffs roll around and the World Series comes around, those ratings are huge. Same with the NBA.
Yeah.
And boxing works in a similar way, where unfortunately, all the fights generally throughout the year get a pretty low amount of attention. And then you have these big tentpole events, which in the past were like when Floyd and Manny fought. Now, I don't even know what we would call it. We may not be at that point where we have those specific events. Now, bringing us to last Saturday, that may now be one of those days, at least, or two of those days throughout the year, will be when Gervonta Davis fights. Because for everything that I see, I saw this past weekend, this guy has truly developed into a superstar. Like, everyone was prefacing it before the fight of, could this guy be the next boxing superstar, potential superstar, blah, blah, blah. Every different variation of that. And, like, you see the results. Mike Coppinger, I'm not going to call him a liar, but I'm going to dispute that his numbers are accurate. He reported the pay-per-view buys at being somewhere between 200 and 225,000 buys, which I wholeheartedly believe is not the case. You look at that. You look at the fact that Tank trended on YouTube for a couple days after the fight. Number one video on YouTube after the fight. You have the clips on social media doing well over 10 million views. I would estimate that maybe close to 20 million people, somewhere in that range, saw the knockout.
You know, not to mention, like, you're seeing Tank's presence along with Little Uzi Vert in places that you typically wouldn't see boxers at. Like, for those of you who are big into, like, fashion or Instagram accounts that cover fashion, they feature Tank on Upscale Hype because he walked in with Uzi Vert and they reported on his outfit. They cover Tank on The Shade Room. They cover – the TMZ was promoting the fight also, but that was paid marketing. But like, for Tank to end up there, that kind of gives you a sense of the level he's at. Because TMZ is not going to cover like Badu Jack versus Adonis Stevenson or something. Like, Tank has really arrived, and the numbers prove it.
Yeah, and so I think that is going to be helpful for people who want to tune in and be that sports fan who can say they know a little bit about boxing, whether they, because they're happy with what they see, or they want to complain and say boxing is dead twice a year, which, you know, there were, I believe that there are people who did that with Floyd. Not a ton of people, but I think that is a percentage of people. Probably not worth bringing up. But I mean, you know, the question is, having had a few days to really think about this, what do you think the best fight is for Tank next?
You know, I love the Gary Russell Jr. fight.
Why?
Why do I love that? I think it just makes, okay, so from my perspective, right, Gary Russell Jr. has went on record many times and said F Floyd Mayweather, he's a coward. I really respect Pretty Boy Floyd, but Money Mayweather ruined the game. He did this, he did that.
This is going to turn into a slander Russell podcast. Just letting you guys know.
No, listen, from my perspective, we've never really had an American fighter who was matched up with Floyd or Floyd fighter show a lot of disdain towards Floyd. Not to my memory, at least. There's that. It's a cross-town rivalry. It's, I think, Baltimore versus D.C., correct?
Something like that.
So you got the cross-town rivalry. You have Gary Russell Jr.'s family and Olympic pedigree. You have, there's a couple of elements to it. But either way, I just think it's the perfect fight. I mean, and it's one of Lomachenko's biggest wins. Is that fair, Gary Russell?
Probably his biggest win.
Okay, so if Gary Russell Jr. is Lomachenko's biggest win and Tank can't get Lomachenko, how does Gary Russell not make sense? And that's my rationale for that fight. It's also easy because it's PBC and PBC. We all want Ryan. I would love to see that. We all want Teofimo. That'll be tricky. Some people want Devin. I'm not really into that. And so that's my take on Tank's next step.
All right. First of all, let's address Gary Russell Jr. I'm not a fan of Gary Russell Jr. I think he's funny. And I like to, you know, he is pretty funny. But let's call a spade here. Gary Russell Jr. having a problem with Floyd Mayweather because he doesn't like the money persona and he respected Pretty Boy is got to be some of the stupidest thing. Like, it's ignorant. Like, oh my God. Gary Russell Jr., who's fought his entire career, his career doesn't even compare to Money Mayweather's. You could say that Money Mayweather was all about making the money and not even fighting the best possible opponents. Maybe. But if you, let's just say, since fighting Lomachenko, we name all the opponents that Gary Russell has fought. Christopher Martin, Johnny Gonzalez, Patrick Hyland, Oscar Escandon, Jojo Diaz, Kiko Martinez, and Tugsat Nyambayar.
Nyambayar.
Of all of these fights, how many of these were actually good fights? Two of them? How many times here has he fought once a year? Every single time. 2020, Nyambayar. 2019, Martinez. 2018, Diaz. 2017, Escandon. 2016, Hyland. 2015, Gonzalez. And in 2014, he fought three times. You know, shout out to you for that. But I don't want to hear it. Gary Russell Jr., I mean, like, the guy gets a lot of credit, okay, for potential and not what he's actually accomplished. I will say he's a smart businessman. I mean, my God, he somehow managed it so that he can fight, for the most part, mediocre opposition once a year, and he does not need any money. He has figured out the game, and I'll give a lot of respect to that, but, that sounds a lot more like Money Mayweather than it does Pretty Boy Floyd. So back to Tank, do I want to see this fight? I think at some point I would like to see the fight, but there are two problems I have with this. One, Gary Russell's not very popular. I don't think you that this. I don't think the story that you brought up to me is sellable. At some point,
be. Okay, pause that. Uh-huh. Can we pause, or you want to keep going?
We can pause.
Okay, pause. So you don't think on Showtime All Access, 2 or 3 episodes, that if you show Gary Russell saying F Mayweather, they show his family lineage of all Olympians and all this stuff, his loss to Lomachenko and how this is his chance to revenge that in his biggest fight to date, and how it's a big battle between Baltimore and Maryland or whatever DMV district thing it is. You don't think that catches people's attention?
No.
Ooh, damn. Tough.
No. I why are people in Texas going to care about that? That's a regional battle between in a not very big market. I don't think so. It's not broad enough. Like, the story there is not something that's going to appeal to everybody. The other thing is, not only is it, I don't think it's a sellable fight. Well, look, it's not sellable yet, I should say, okay? Everything is yet. In 1 year, if Gary Russell commits to fighting twice within the next 12 months, and then they say, like, oh, then we're going to do the tank fight, okay, fine. I could be completely wrong. But as it stands right now, Gary Russell Jr. coming off the Nyan Bayar fight, the only way, let me get to the other thing, and then I'll say the last part. The other thing is that this is another featherweight. And while Leo had already fought once at 130, I think it's a bad look for Tank if his first or these next two fights come against guys who are perceived to be featherweights. Now, here's the thing.
I have another question when you're ready.
Well, I'll say this last part. The thing, the counter to what I'm saying that could make everything that I'm saying wrong is if the numbers for Tank's fight against Leo are high enough and the indications are there that it doesn't matter, that Tank is the draw and the people who tune in to see Tank are going to tune in no matter what. So you can have him fight a Gary Russell Jr. and he could be a damn bantamweight for all they care. And it doesn't matter because people are not going to look at that. They're going to look at Tank as a product and want to see Tank. If that's the case, then all bets are off and you could fight Gary Russell next and it'll be a good event and it'll sell.
So my question is, you mentioned that he's coming from 126.
Uh-huh.
If you were to make the fight. But I felt that when there was a little rumor that Gary Russell requested Burchelt, I sensed a little bit of buzz around that fight. Would you agree or no?
Here's the thing. If Gary Russell was going to fight Miguel Burchelt, that would be the biggest fight of Burchelt's career. He'll have never fought an opponent like Gary Russell. And the fact that it's Gary Russell Jr. would bring some attention. But it would be big in the boxing sense. And I'm not talking about big in boxing sense. In boxing, sure, Gary Russell and Tank is a big fight, but I don't care about boxing. I care about, on the whole, are we going to bring in those people that only watch 4 fights a year?
The crossover audience.
That's what I want to know. And right now, Gervonta Davis has potential, and we are seeing it, that he could actually connect with that fan base. Is it Miguel Burchelt? Absolutely not. Is Gary Russell? Absolutely not. So I'm not putting down that the fights are good. I love either of those fights. I love Gary Russell fighting Burchelt. I love Gary Russell fighting Tank. The only thing is, if I'm looking at it as an event that I'm trying to sell, I know that both of them I'm not high on selling, but I know that if I'm representing Gervonta, I know that unless numbers indicate that Tank can sell it on his own, that may not be the best path forward. I also don't really like Gary Russell. Have I said that?
I've noticed a couple people mention it. That people are starting to catch on. You're not the biggest Gary Russell fan, and you're also not the biggest Regis Rougarou Progray fan.
Oh, where are you going with this?
Oh, no, there's no going anywhere. Just, you know, people DM me and say, what's wrong with Gary Russell? What's wrong with Regis? Leave him alone. They're great guys.
No, is something is wild to me. And I've been a moderator on Reddit since 2012, I think 2013. So it's 7 years. And over the course of, it's wild because, like, you know, I went from posting a lot there. I don't post as much anymore. And if you go and read the comments there, you'll understand why. But I've been called everything. I've been called a Pacquiao fanboy. I've been called a Mayweather nut hugger. I've been called everything. A top ranked shill, PBC shill, Eddie Hearn lover, things like that. I've been called everything. And, like, I've been called in my DMs now on Twitter a PBC shill. And I've also, now I expect to get called out for what I've said about Gary Russell Jr. and what I have said about Regis Prograis. And I will say again, if prompted, I mean, even before, like, you saw me today, or was it yesterday? I don't know. I was talking about Stan Jonas, who I was really impressed with tonight, but I was totally down on him. Actually, it was more in the context of Richard Schaefer and all of his fighters, but Stan Jonas was definitely got a little extra attention there. I'm just saying what I think, and I could be wrong about all of this, and I totally am willing to be wrong about this. I'd love for Gary Russell and Tank to be a big fight. One of the things I just really like about that, the potential, and I think the people who are mad about the NOA stuff, you're going to be happy for me to hear what I'm about to say. Tank doing well at 130, fighting a 126-pound fighter in Gary Russell Jr., it really does show that maybe, just maybe, boxing's obsession with size is starting to go away. And whereas welterweight in the past has been, you know, about as low as we can go when we're expecting major events, maybe we're going to see a shift and maybe there's more openness for the lower weight classes because boxing isn't necessarily friendly. And, like, I wonder if that's, like, a human being thing, because in WWE for the longest time, and I don't know if this is still the case, but, like, the biggest stars are always the big guys. You ain't never seen 5'8" guy be the best guy in the WWE.
Well, I think there's, like, a few, like, touch points to talk about. You know, it's so funny because everyone was like, a few people got at me on Twitter and they're like, why would you not tell your friends about 118? Like, what's, like, why would you not even try? I have DMs in my phone that I could send to people. I tell people about 118. Do you know what they say to me? My girlfriend is bigger than that. My child is bigger than that. And there's no disrespect to anyone in that weight class, but, like, American sports fans in particular, I can't talk about anywhere else, but we're used to seeing, like, LeBron, he's 6'8", 250, flying all over the place. Tom Brady is what, like 6'4", 6'5", right?
I don't know. That sounds about right.
The point is, we're accustomed to bigger guys. You know, like, the cool appeal about sports is, like, these are gigantic people who could do things that average people can't. And I think for the average casual sports fan, looking at, like, 118, it's like I probably haven't weighed 118 since 8th grade, 9th grade. And again, that's no disrespect to anyone at that weight class, but it's just a harder sell. But also now, with on the flip side, I agree with your point about 130. What's cool about it, 130 and 135, is you're seeing all these fighters who have a cool storyline, a cool narrative. You have Teofimo, this young phenom from New York, Brooklyn, who stopped one of the pound-for-pound greats in Lomachenko. He's really close in weight class to Tank, who is aligned with Floyd Mayweather. He's aligned to all these rappers. Then you have Ryan Garcia, who's also around the same weight class, who's like this social media phenom, the new Oscar De La Hoya, pretty boy. Girls love him. And then Devin, who's kind of like in the background, but he kind of was under Floyd Mayweather as well. So, like, you have this cool narrative with all these guys around a smaller weight class. And for this particular group, people kind of, like, ignore the weight because the story is so great. So, yeah, I agree with you that, like, maybe this will open doors for smaller weight classes. It would be cool if it pans out in a bigger way.
Yeah, I mean, look, I followed boxing long enough that I'm really skeptical about it. And that's just years and years of watching. And I seem to know what people like. And, you know, I'm not holding my breath for it. But Tank is connected in a way that nobody else has. And we also can't ignore that he's also not liked as much as, and this is the thing about Tank, like, for better or worse, there are things that really polarize people. And I'd be remiss to bring up that, like, you know, Tank also has what is, I don't know if, I can't remember if there's like an actual case going on about it, but the incident that he had with his, was his ex-girlfriend or something, or his girlfriend, I don't know, where he appeared to grab her by her jacket and then yank her. And I don't know what happened. I don't know if the video ever came out that we saw, but there's also that, which is rightfully so. If you don't like that, then cool. You know, that's well within your rights to not like Tank, but it seems Tank has done something to polarize everybody.
And that's like, that's one of the strongest like assets that a draw can have. Usually the polarizing guys are big deals in this sport, in my opinion, at least, because Floyd was pretty polarizing. Pacquiao was pretty polarizing.
Pacquiao wasn't polarizing. Unless you actually...
I think when, listen, as much as there were people who liked Pacquiao, there was a large contingency of people who hated Pacquiao. And, but, you know, ultimately all that does is just drive up the talk. You have people arguing on message boards. You have people arguing on Twitter, Facebook, Reddit. And at the end of the day, all it does is make people want to tune in more, which is good.
At a certain point, what polarized people about both Floyd and Manny was that the other one existed.
Exactly.
Now, and that's always a recipe. The question is, who's going to be that for Tank? I think there's a handful of guys who could be that. And I'm sure they all want to be that. They all came out on social media the following day trying to get their name thrown into the mix, not mentioning any names, but Ryan Garcia. So, so yeah, I mean, we'll table this. We did a lot of talking about Tank and Santa Cruz after on last Saturday. So we will move on. Go back and listen to that episode if you want more. I imagine you've already done that. Okay, let's talk about Usyk. He won a unanimous decision over Derek Chisora, but it was not the most impressive of performances. How would you assess Usyk's performance? And, I mean, let's be realistic. Where did this go off the rails?
You know, it's tough because, like, I like Usyk. It's funny because a lot of people, I think some people, not a lot, some people think he's corny, but, like, his, you know, his Hey Derek shtick, his dancing, it's funny in, like, a geeky, weird kind of way. But it's enjoyable. But the size, man, the size is going to be hard for him because at heavyweight, you have a lot of dudes that are 6'6", 6'7", 6'8", that are, like, indestructible and can crack. I thought it was a good performance, but the size is just going to be tough. And, you know, some members of media, they started off saying he was going to be the next Evander Holyfield. Then after Witherspoon downgraded it to Chris Bird, and now I don't think he's even getting Chris Bird. So, you know, I root for him, but I also try to remain realistic about his chances at a weight division where guys are weighing in at 250, 260 pretty regularly.
All right. That was a very, very measured and fair take from you. Not what I expected.
I like you, Sick. He's cool. Like, listen.
You're leaving it to me to be the bad guy.
Nah, I don't want to. Listen, with me, anyone who unifies a division, you got to respect that because it's not easy. You have to respect that. The problem for me is when media does the extra stuff. Like, we don't, like, let's just see what happens. It's okay to say that sometimes.
I mean, look, I don't care. You did it at another division. Okay, great. And you were, and if you went down a cruiserweight, I'd favor him against everyone. But you got to come with a brand new, like, you got to open your eyes when a guy moves up in weight. Because, like, usually, things go really well, but there's also been cases where it just, the weight jump is like you, I feel like every fighter, there's a literally like a 1 ounce breaking point where before that, you're just as great as you were from those lower weight classes. But once you get past that weight, it you turn into a different fighter and that fighter is not as good as the fighter you were at the lower weight classes. And when it comes to cruiserweight and heavyweight, I think you're far more at risk to reach the breaking point where you can't be the same guy anymore. And I don't know that that's the case with Usyk, okay? I'm a little scared about it because, as like you, I like Usyk. I have praised Usyk for a really long time. There was a point in time where I was incorrectly, but I thought on a level of skill that they're displaying in the ring, I thought I preferred and maybe even thought that Usyk was a little better than Lomachenko. And the issue that I see now that I'm kind of scared for Usyk a little bit is that while he is very skilled, I think there's something mentally off with his performances. And the how I'll describe it is it seems like Usyk is really concerned about getting hit. And he's fighting in a way that it doesn't look like the way he was fighting at cruiserweight. And I don't know that he, like, if I can't justify this any other way other than to say that he's got some block, that there's something that he needs to overcome mentally for him to be able to, because he just doesn't look comfortable. And then the other thing is that he's actually, like, because he doesn't look comfortable, he's a little more vulnerable than we've ever seen him before. I mean, Derek Chisora was landing shots that very few guys have landed on Usyk in the past. And good thing Chisora doesn't have a ton of power because he would have put himself into position to hurt Usyk in that fight. And the other thing about it, and this is hopefully the more realistic explanation, is that maybe those injuries have caught up to him because he definitely looks like he's lost a step.
You know, I was going to say the reality at heavyweight is it's a different kind of mental pressure. I laugh the way people assess boxing versus the heavyweight division. It's a completely different thing, man. Like I'm 6 foot. Like I'll put it to you in basketball terms because I play at a high level. I'm 6 foot four, guarding someone that's 6 foot seven and 20 to 30 pounds heavier than me. Sure, we're both tall and big and athletic. It's way different. It's way different. And like for Usyk to be in the ring with a guy like Chisora, who is very much accustomed to battling guys that are 250, can crack really hard, and he understands like the science of like where to put himself to remain safe, where he can go and get a shot off and it's still safe. Like, it's a completely different thing. When you're at cruiserweight, you're typically dealing with guys that are similar size to you. So I just, man, like, I hate to keep going back to the weight thing, but, like, it's just different, man. It's hard. Like, if you really want me to get spicy, I have a few takes on who I think could beat Usyk at heavyweight. I'm not even going to say it because, like, I'll get clipped again, and I don't want to do that because I'm not here for
you
that.
But look, this is it. This is perfect, okay? You just literally made my point for me. When you're – there's a certain outcome that you are trying to avoid. You take away a bit of what is natural for you. And so you being worried about getting clipped and showing up on Twitter where people then talk about something that you said, and therefore you holding back is what I think is happening with Usyk, where he's holding back a little bit because – he don't want to get caught by one of these big heavyweights. So you can say what you said. I think there's one thing that you... No. Actually, you can say. I mean, I could deal with whatever you're about to say.
Oh, you were good. Come on, man. Let me get the helmet before I get on the bike, man. Okay, listen. If Usyk got stopped by someone like Dominic Brazil, mm-hmm. it wouldn't shock me. And this is no criticism of Usyk's skill. He's very skilled. And a great guy.
Well, no, but it's heavyweight. Like, any but of these guys can get stopped.
Listen, he's 6 foot seven, 250. It took Wilder, like, the most ridiculous cannon shot to stop him. And Joshua, he just beat him over, like,
dog
eight rounds.
Shit out of him for seven rounds? Like,
seven or eight, what was it?
It was, like, seven or eight rounds.
So you just have this big 6 foot seven zombie chasing Usyk around. Usyk, I don't believe in his power. And again, it's no disrespect, but it's just different. Like, what is he going to do to keep a Brazil, a Dillian White off him?
Okay, Dillian White, settle down. It's just settle down.
Listen, it's heavyweight. A guy like Dillian White, who is really big
and not good.
He could chase him down and just throw hooks all night.
Dillian White chase somebody down? Really? I'm not letting you have that one. You can have all the other ones, but not that one.
I'm not saying Dillian White would for sure beat him. All I'm saying is these are big guys. These are really big guys. It's tough.
Fine, fine. Okay, so I thought you were going to give me more names, but you really just posed a concept out.
No, I stopped at Dominic Brazil because he's like the laughing stock of the heavyweight division. But realistically, he's tough as nails. And he can crack. And I'm not saying like he's a threat at the division or anything like that. But like when you're tough and you can punch, like that's a good starting point. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I think with the exception of Fury, everyone else in the division is really susceptible to anybody with a punch. Like Fury's so big and he can move that he mitigates a lot of the risk. Now, he still has the risk, of course, but because it's heavyweight, and that's the whole thing with heavyweight, is like why it's fun is you could be a skilled, like Andy Ruiz is a really skilled boxer when he's actually training. But that doesn't mean that Anthony Joshua won't stop him if they were to, God forbid, ever have a trilogy, because these guys are big. Or if Andy Ruiz came back and he fought Charles Martin and Charles Martin just smoked him, like that wouldn't be shocking. And it's because heavyweight has the equalizer. No other division has that. Kubrat Pulev could neutralize Anthony Joshua with one right hand and all those titles switch hands yet again. And I think Usyk, what you're saying is that he's vulnerable to losing to one of these guys that on a rankings level are far beneath him. Not so far, actually, but that are
far,
below him.
Far enough, though. Far enough.
Yeah, I don't know. I think what's the word I'm looking for here? The evaluation of Dominic Brazil is completely off. Like, Dominic Brazil, say what you want, he's a big bastard. He's like 6'7". I mean, Brazil's bigger in person than he looks on TV. Okay? He is a mountain of a man. Dominic Brazil will knock out Adam Konacki. I guarantee
that. It could be brutal. It could be brutal.
And do you think that Brazil beats Robert Hellenius? By the way, these are all great fights. Like, I don't know that these, like, they're not really meaningful, but like,
these are like fight night, unlimited fatigue fights.
These are what JR would call slobber knockers.
Yes.
You got two big hosses, Dominic Brazil, Robert Hellenius. Who cares? You don't need it to be for anything other than someone here is.
It doesn't have to be anything for anything but means.
My dream fight in heavyweight is probably Brazil versus Joe Joyce.
Oh my god!
That, like, people, if you were watching that fight and somebody walked by the room, they'll be like, "Are you watching this in like 0.5 speed?"
It would be. How many rounds do you think that fight would go?
Four.
It would be hilarious. Like, I had a vision of Joyce charging at Brazil and like extremely slow, and Brazil just throwing like big winging punches and like four or five knockdowns. Something that some people would call like fight of the millennium, when really it's just like a complete joke. But I would definitely watch it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of sad that Joe Joyce is going to lose. I'm pretty sure he's going to lose to Dubois. And because I just think that there's, like, we could do so much more with Joe Joyce's career. I mean, he's 35. Like, come on. Do we really think that Joe Joyce is, like, at 11-0 going to have this miraculous run in the heavyweight division? No, absolutely not. So let's just make some good fights with this guy. Daniel Dubois, I mean, look, it's heavyweight again, so I would not be surprised at all if Dubois, you know, got beat here, but I think it's very unlikely. By the way, the heavyweight division is like in shambles right now. Now, I know people will be like, oh no, what are you talking about? I mean, like, there's no young talent that looks really good in the division apart from Daniel Dubois. Like, all the quote unquote prospects are not actually prospect age. There's like Dubois and
Yoka.
No, Yoka's already 28.
28. Well, no, I would just, I commented Yoka because you said they're not of prospect age.
Yeah, he's not prospect age. Like Frank Sanchez, which, you know, he's listed at 28. I don't know. You look at Frank Sanchez, how old do you think he is?
Frank Sanchez?
Yeah.
I don't know. I like to trust the Cubans. Shout out to the Cubans. My bad. Oh, man, I'm making... My bad.
Frank Sanchez does not look 28. I'm just going to put it at that.
Wait, while we're on prospects, what about Hrgović?
Hrgović? He's like 28, 29. Let me see.
Really?
Hrgović.
He's like under 25.
He's 28.
Oh, man, I'm tripping.
Yeah, like the only ones that are under 25 is Dubois, who's 23, and Jared Anderson, who's, I think, 20. No, he's 20.
Big baby.
The real big baby. He should say the clean baby.
Yeah.
Get it? Because he's not using, like, several different variations of performance-enhancing drugs that double as sex pills.
Yeah, you mean the testosterone pills that you get from the gas station?
Extends. I feel like I had a friend who did take one of those, and he was just like, yeah, I thought my heart was going to explode. But I didn't ask him if he beat, though.
Oh, man. Yeah, those pills are sketch, man. One time,
and a buddy. Story here.
Me and a buddy, we were driving his father's car.
Okay.
And he had to pick up something, a bag, for his dad, he called him. And one of those pills fell out of the bag, and my buddy was like, just like, oh my God, like, what's wrong with this guy?
So your friend caught his dad buying, for lack of a better word, libido-enhancing pills.
From the gas station.
So you guys were at fucking Circle K, buying the pills that are right at the counter with the girl on the packaging. Uh-huh.
Or like a digitally enhanced, like, Python or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And did he ever ask his dad about, like, you know, hey, how'd it go?
That's one of those, no way. If you knew who, like, this dad in particular, that's definitely not the question you ask him.
I'm just, you know, you just have to inquire.
No, some people you have that relationship with, but this particular one you had to kind of pretend you didn't see it.
Oh, boy. I mean, imagine having to live with that. Like, imagine, I don't know if his mom and dad were still together, but imagine they are. And you got to live with knowing that about your parents.
That's what I mean. I could go story time with this father for, it's like we should save it for another podcast, because I have a lot of stories about this particular person.
But your friend's dad and the libido pills?
Libido, well, we could talk about, this family, this very close family friend of mine.
You still talk to
him?
There
was that story. Oh, yeah, this is one of my best friends.
Oh, wow.
You know,
wow.
There was that time. There was another time where, I can't even tell a story. It's like way too R. It's not PG-13.
Well, it also, like, anybody who knows you that may listen to this, like, it may be identifying.
Yeah, let me tone it down a little bit.
We'll have to say that one for once the red light goes off.
Indeed.
All right. Anyway, so what do you think is the ceiling for Usyk's run at heavyweight?
You know, like, matchmaking is always important. And I think you could match him to have, like, a decent little career. But the second, like, he's in with, like, a banger, it's going to, like, the career, I'm sorry, the Usyk story ends badly. I guess for Usyk, the ideal situation, I think, would be to face Joshua. It's probably the most winnable fight at heavyweight, I think. I don't know. Some people might say Wilder, Joshua at the highest level. And he's in line for that fight, right?
For Joshua?
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess you should go ahead with the Joshua fight unless you want to maybe fight something in between that. But, I don't know, I wouldn't risk it. I mean, he's right there. It's a huge opportunity. It's a huge payday. I don't think I would discourage that fight if I was involved with Usyk's career.
You know what? We're in November. So about 10 months ago, I was talking to somebody that we both know. And, you know, obviously 10 months ago, we our idea of Usyk is very different than the one we have now. And we were talking about potential matchups, and we talked about Joshua and Usyk. And it's like, how do you think that goes? And I think Usyk has a path to outbox Joshua. And he just said, no chance. None. And I was like, really? None? It's like, nope. Knockout, easy. And like, I pushed back because I didn't agree. And but I see it now. I think Usyk is a cash out guy. I think he's competitive with all these guys who are not top. I think he's competitive with Povetkin. I think if he were to fight Luis Ortiz, he'd be competitive. But one, there's a high level of risk in those fights for Usyk. And I wouldn't be shocked if he were to get upset by one of those guys. But I think ultimately, if he were to fight Fury or Wilder or Joshua, there's a high likelihood that he has no shot in those fights. Like, I think Fury could outbox him pretty easily. I think Joshua will likely stop him. And I think Wilder eventually will catch him. The way Chisora was able to be unorthodox in that fight and continually catch Usyk until he completely gassed, and that's something that, you know, definitely needs to be mentioned. Usyk lost probably the first four rounds of that fight. And once Chisora, like, turned into Chisora, Usyk looked like he was in trouble in that fight. And that leads me to believe that, like, guys like Wilder and Joshua and Fury, those guys aren't going to gas. They're just going to keep working, and they'll find him. And so, you know, a year ago, a year ago, he had fought Witherspoon and didn't look so hot, which I thought was just kind of like, you know, the jitters of first moving up to heavyweight. But let's say, like, pre-Witherspoon fight, I thought Usyk was, like, I thought it was a lock that he would be a champion at heavyweight. And, I thought he was the perfect guy to beat Joshua. But now at this point, seeing Joshua fight that disciplined fight against Andy Ruiz, and then Usyk underperform again, like, I'm selling stock in Usyk. I'll keep a little bit, but I'm going to sell most of it.
Yeah, I encourage anyone who's listening to go back and watch some old school heavyweight fights. And I'm only from all eras, like black and white, Ali, Tyson, Lennox Lewis, Riddick Bowe. Just from decade to decade to decade, watch a few heavyweight fights. What you'll see is the rules are completely different. I'm pretty sure I said that earlier. But if you don't have the power to keep a guy off you, it's like your chances are slim to none. I mean, let's think about the top level, right? How many fights are there at heavyweight of top level guys where it's just like I outboxed him and won a clean decision? Like Joshua, most of Joshua's fights are ending in stoppage. Some of Fury's fights are ending in stoppage. Some are ending in outboxing, but there's still a lot of violence in them. Wilder's fights, we know how those all end. Ortiz is mostly stopping guys. Dillian White is mostly like.
Dillian White is like here, not even winning a lot of fights, but go on.
He's here and there, but ultimately his fights are like knockdowns are happening. One guy's getting hurt. It's a very violent division. Unless you're like Ali, you're not winning at heavyweight without violence. And I just, again, I like Usyk. I just don't see the violence in him. You need it at heavyweight. It's so different.
No, that's a good point. I like the way you put it. It's not knockout power. It's violence. Like, you have to be destructive with what you're doing. And I think Fury, a guy like Fury who mostly wins his fights on the cards, albeit, you know, he still has a relatively high knockout ratio compared to some other divisions. You know, you do need to have, like, he is the exception to the rule.
Is he, though? I mean, like, let's look at, like, the Otto Wallin fight. There came a point in that fight where Otto Wallin wasn't allowing him to just box around and faint
fight. But I mean, like, Fury, yeah, Fury does, like...
Like, Fury will lean on you, throw his elbow in your neck, do a whole bunch of dirty, like, borderline illegal stuff, and he gets away with it. And, like, that is a part of his, like...
But that's different.
Listen, since we talked about things that you don't want to say and you hold back, the truth on Fury is not what people think. as Fury fights on in his career, because like truly his career is kind of like mysterious. He doesn't have a lot of big wins before Vlad, and that's a huge win. He doesn't have a lot of huge wins before Wilder 2, and then he had that, and that's a huge win. As Fury continues to fight on, we're going to see a lot more about him, about his skill set, about what he has in his heart, and he's not what anyone thinks. People think he's Ali, 6'9" Ali, or whatever. He's not that. I'm not saying he's not good, but he's not what people think.
Well,
he's rough on the inside. He'll be dirty. He can be punched. Otto Wallen had him hurt badly late in the fight. Deontay Wilder hurt Fury pretty badly in the second round of the second fight. But people ignore these things because they think about the outcome. Fury relies on a lot of violence. It's just hidden behind the narrative of his great boxing.
So, not necessarily the point you were making, but something that is interesting is, like, what do we know about fighters against, like, other top fighters? And Tyson Fury has fought two top fighters, Wilder and Vlad. And Wilder's only fought two top fighters in Fury and Ortiz. And, like, that's an interesting thought experiment to go through and just say, like, okay, if we only compare them to other top-level peers, how do these fighters perform? And, you know, like, Golovkin's a good one where, like, the reputation that Golovkin has doesn't match who he's shown himself to be when he's fought other top guys. And, you know, I something that I say a lot, you know, when I look at predicting fights and things like that is, like, I neutralize a lot of things because this is an area where I look, where I say, like, you know, I don't care, Anthony Joshua, what you did against Carlos Takam. I know you struggled a little bit in that fight. You still got the win and you got the stoppage, but I don't care because Carlos Takam is an opponent you were expected to beat, and you're not going to be fighting a guy that you're expected to beat. No, I'm assuming that he's not fighting Kubrat Pulev, who he is expected to beat, but you're not fighting a guy who, you know, like that. You know, you look at Joshua, Klitschko, Joseph Parker, and Andy Ruiz, and I wouldn't even put Ruiz there because let's be real here. How many of you actually thought Ruiz had a shot at beating him the first time around? None of you. So, I mean, we don't have to really talk about that, but that's just something interesting to put into words and to look at, you know, with all these fighters, you could take it to any weight class. Like, how many opponents have they had? How many fights have been against other similar level skilled guys? And then how do you evaluate that fighter based off of that? Not based off of the padding of the resume. You know, how do you rate Joshua off of Klitschko, Parker, and Andy Ruiz, if you want to give it to Andy Ruiz, not Molina and Charles Martin and Dillian White.
And I would also like to throw in there, forget the names. Like, people will look at names and, like, it'll take them into narrative. Forget the names. When a guy is in the ring and he really wants to beat you and he really had a great training camp and he really believes he has a chance, you're going to get a different fight than a guy with a name who's there to lose. Otto Wallen, shout to him, he was not there to lose against Fury. He was getting dogged a lot of the night and he still put on a hell of a performance. One good enough to scare Fury. That matters.
Let me say something about that. Like, just this a little tidbit here. There is something in common with Wallen's performance against Fury and Teofimo's performance against Vasily Lomachenko. Do you know what it is?
Tell me.
Joey Gamache.
Ooh, that's right.
Wallen came over. He's been working with Joey Gamache. Teofimo added Gamache into his camp to really, you know, start to hammer out some of the things that weren't super tight. And the results speak for themselves. I think we need to start putting Joey Gamache as a guy. We need to start talking about this guy as one of the brilliant minds in boxing. You look at, I mean, literally just off of those two performances, Wallen, a guy who nobody knew who he was, never heard of him, etc. Guy who everyone thought Fury, you know, this is just another tune-up fight for Fury to get ready for Wilder. And damn near Wallen, even without the cut, damn near pulled it out.
He hurt Fury bad in like the.
He was in the 12th round.
I was gonna say 11th or 12th, but 12th.
Yeah, it was the 12th round, and then you look at Lomachenko getting shut out for essentially half the fight. That wasn't a mistake. That was a concerted effort, an execution of a good game plan by Teofimo Lopez. And I have to believe that Joey Gamash is one of those guys that we really need to start thinking about as like when a fighter needs to change some things in their camp, when they're just almost there and maybe they need to something else to get them to the next stage. This is a guy that his name needs to come up.
Is he your favorite new era trainer?
I don't know if he's my favorite one. I don't have any favorite trainers.
I only asked that because I watched an interview of my favorite new era trainer. And so thought I'd ask you.
Who's your favorite new era trainer?
Derek James.
Oh, I mean, now Derek is great too.
But I just want to expand real quick. I love Derek James because, you know, I'm a big believer in intangibles. Like people can always be skilled and be fast and be explosive. But if you don't work on the intangibles, like there could always be holes. And so like, I was listening to a Derek James interview. I want to say it may have been on the PBC podcast, I think. And he was saying to prepare Jermell for Rosario. He knew Rosario was going to be extremely hungry for that fight. And so he constantly reminded Jermell all camp, you started here. Like, back in the day when you were taking the bus, like the whole camp was just about the start and how to stay hungry and not lose that edge. And obviously the rah-rah talk doesn't win the fight, but to have a fighter in like maximum intensity mode and focused and locked in and hungry, it makes a big difference. So like I like Derek James's, like the stuff he instills in his fighters mentally. Gamash is super dope. Also, he's proven to be one of the elite new guys. You know, you have Breadman. Some people love him, some people hate him, but like he's earned his reputation to be in the mix as well. So there's a couple guys,
but not because he's actually proven anything, in my opinion. But let me well look about Derek James. First of all, I love Derek James, and I think like Derek is a guy that I don't know. He probably would never do it, but like that guy needs a podcast or something because he's actually just a great guy to listen to. Super nice. Every interview that I've ever listened to from him, like, it's been great. Now, you said he focuses on the intangibles, but let me read you the definition of intangible. Unable to be touched or grasped, not having physical presence. Now, that would mean that there's just something about an intangible that you, like, it's hard to train. And hunger is something that would be an intangible. You can't touch it, you can't grasp it, you can't see it. It's just something that if you like, you know that it's there or you know that it's not there. And if a trainer can focus on these things and be able to bring these things out, it's way more valuable than the guys who are going to tweak certain things physically. Because we've seen guys with their sheer willpower alone can make poor fundamentals go a long way. Deontay Wilder being one of the most famous and probably will go down as the most famous example in boxing of a guy who had intangibles and not much else, and it worked out better than guys like Lomachenko. I mean, you look at the money Wilder's made in his career. He's made a lot more money than Lomachenko's made off of one fight. Sorry, Wilder's made in one fight probably more than what Lomachenko's made in his whole career. And Lomachenko is unbelievably skilled. By the way, I mentioned earlier about how I get like conflicting messages of people unhappy with things I say. I got called a Lomachenko fanboy, which like anybody who knows me knows that like I have been super hard on Lomachenko his whole career. And then to be called a Lomachenko fanboy and like someone tell me my feelings were hurt after Teofimo beat him was like, I could only laugh at it. Because it's like, this could be, nothing is further from the truth here. I don't care at all.
Like Floyd said, talking good about you, talking bad about you, just be happy they're talking about you.
Yeah. But anyway, I mean, we've gotten into this whole long thing about trainers, but I don't even know what we were talking about. Oh, God.
We were talking about
Usyk.
Your competition amongst your peers of similar skill. I bought up how Fury is different than what people think he is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. I mean, Fury's got a lot of dog in him. Like, I think you look at some of the adversity he's faced in his career. I mean, Steve Cunningham had him down in that fight. And the dude knows how to, you know, bend the rules. And as Paulie said, which Paulie doesn't say a lot of smart things these days, although he thinks he's very smart, but I can assure you that Paulie Malignaggi. But one of the things he did say is that, you know, nobody's a saint in the ring and you can't be anyway. You know, they were bringing up, I can't remember who it was, but it was during a fight and somebody was like, you know, they were doing some little bit of the rubbing of the forearm. And they asked Paulie, you know, I think they were like not happy and they were expecting Paulie to say, you know, maybe that was a foul. And Paulie was just like, yeah, if you're not doing that, that's on you. Like you can't be a saint in the ring. And like Lomachenko tried that against Salido. He tried to be a saint. And like, look, that was like super noble of him. But yeah, check it out. You got an L.
You know, that's something in boxing that people are infatuated with skill, but there are skilled boxers and there are fighters. Maidana is a fighter. Like he took the best fighter in the world to like one round away from a loss. Now you could argue scoring, but it was a very close fight. And he killed Broner, who's in a gym. He'd probably look
a million times. He actually didn't literally kill Broner, guys. Broner is still alive.
Sorry. He beat him up badly. If you bought both of them in a gym, I'm sure Broner would look better on every, whatever, like speed bag, whatever, all the like tricky stuff. And I just say that to say, you know, Fury is, he fools a lot of people into thinking it's going to be feints all night, footwork, shuffling, turning, pivoting. If you fall asleep and get lulled into that trick, you're going to lose. And if you bring it to him, he's going to try to get real physical with you because he's 6'9" and like 280, I think.
Now, you're a fan of Jalen.
Shout to Jalen.
I'm going to have to steal one of his points, but it applies here. And I hope you know which, like, if you listen like you say you do, if you watch like you say you do, you'll know what I'm about to say. What am I about to say? Let's see.
You going champagne into campaigning?
No. Although Jalen was like for like 3 years, like he said that every episode.
That was a shtick for sure.
This is not a don't get fired moment. This is in the NBA. Jalen played in the NBA. We're talking about Jalen Rose, by the way.
Former Jalen Rose, player. Right? Jalen Rose.
In the NBA, there are two types of players. There's skill, and then there's will. You get to the NBA, and you got to have one of each. You got to have one or the other. You either got skill, Steph Curry, or you got will, Patrick Beverley. And in boxing, you got the same thing. You got skill, Lomachenko, and you got will, Marcos Maidana.
Jared Hurd.
Jared Hurd is a will guy.
I'm trying to think of other dudes.
In what category?
Ultimately, it comes down to that. You could be the most skilled guy in your gym. If you're across the ring from someone that doesn't take no for an answer and on that particular night is hot and can take all your punches and doesn't stop, there's a good chance you're going to lose. And I
Alex like, Caruso, that's a will guy.
To keep it in the heavyweight division, this is especially important because there's no weight difference. Fury may outweigh you by 60 pounds. Joshua may outweigh you by 40 or 50 pounds. Wilder may be 40 pounds less than you, but he hits harder than everyone in the division.
Wilder, a will guy.
I don't know, man. A Wilder, just like I said, Fury is not what everyone thinks he is. Wilder isn't what everyone thinks.
But
he
look,
is.
You may have a little of both, and I think Wilder's very skillful with his right hand. He knows how to find it. But I would say that he's more will than he is skill.
That's so tough for me. That's very tough.
Now, Fury is like really, really like split. I think you can put him in either one. Now, he's got both. We're not saying it's one or the other. There's like obviously some nuance here. You know, Patrick Beverley, if you played him one-on-one, he's still going to 21-0 you. Maybe not me, but probably you.
Yeah, I was thinking you probably give P. Bev a couple buckets before he like takes the knees out.
If me and Pat played one on one, we're fist fighting. There's no chance that it ends any other way. Like I'm punching him.
Well, after like the first check,
literally, I get the ball, I bounce the ball back to him. He throws it too hard at my chest. I slap him, and then we start scrapping.
What the us, man? Spat.
Hey, you know what? Hilarious. Me and him would be friends, but if it was me versus Kyrie, I'd never talk to that guy again.
Kyrie is an interesting character, to say the least.
What, do you got, like, some personal experience with him?
I've heard some stories. I don't have any personal experience, but I've heard some stories, and I just hear, you know, what you hear about him in the media is true.
I mean, he's given us enough. Would you say that Keith Thurman is like the Kyrie Irving of boxing?
Like part of me wants to say yes, because they're both like very unique. But I think Kyrie is okay being a little disruptive. Do you think Thurman is okay being disruptive? I don't know. I feel like Thurman just thinks he's that guy.
But Thurman does disruptive. Think he's that guy.
I'm very excited for Thurman's comeback, by the way. Whenever it happens, I don't know when that is.
Dude, he looks like he's still got a lot of weight to lose.
Man, some of these fighters, man, pandemic. I thought I was bad.
Hey, no one's been as bad as Jared Hurt.
Listen, I heard Jared Hurt is going to come back at cruiserweight. That's what the streets are telling me.
It wouldn't shock me.
That's a joke. I'm not Ray. I don't have sources.
Nah, Jared just looks like he's out here training with the Abner Mara's waistband.
The Abner Mara's waistband.
If you guys don't know what I'm talking about, you have to look at Abner Mara's stories on Instagram, and then you'll get the joke there. Okay. Anyway, off of this stuff, let's talk about Inoue's fight with Maloney, even though we talked about it earlier. Inoue stopped Jason Maloney in the 7th round. I'm curious where they go next with Inoue, because I feel like he's... Well, look, realistically, we've already said this. I don't think there's really anything for him to do at bantamweight. Like, I don't see him losing to any of these guys. I can name you the top 50 at bantamweight, and I don't think any of these guys truly stands a chance at beating Inoue. They talked at Rigondeaux. No, Rigondeaux, I don't think. Rigondeaux, I think, is the kind of guy that he's not going to give you respect until you get it. And I think Inoue is the kind of guy where if Rigondeaux gave him the opportunity to get his respect, Inoue is probably going to knock him out. Or at least really hurt him and like change the course of the way that fight could have played out. So I don't know what they do with him. I don't see the Casemiro fight happening. And so the only move there is to move up to 122.
Yeah, but what do you do with him at 122?
So, again, another issue. But I think Dogbe is an interesting fight. The wild thing is that I think Inoue would be bigger than Dogbe. Taller, at least.
Height-wise, right?
Yeah.
He is pretty short.
What about Inoue versus Mike Plania?
I've wondered for a long time. I'm glad you brought his name up, because I wanted to ask you for a minute. Is he like what? I know he's with Sean Gibbons, but... Is he top rank? Is he PBC? Is he DAZN? Where does he call home?
So I don't think that he's necessarily tied down to anybody, but I wouldn't be shocked if Top Rank has options on him, given that he appeared on the card.
Right.
So that's what I think, most likely. I mean, look, if he goes to 122, there are options at Top Rank, including... Isaac Dogbe. I think Josh Greer potentially could be an opponent, although that's like a little ways off, because you know Josh Greer just got beat by Mike Plania and got dropped twice and looked pretty bad.
He had a good comeback later on in the fight.
Yeah, when Plania like super gassed.
Yes.
Maybe they can build Inoue into a fight with Carlos Castro, who I thought looked pretty good in his fight against Cesar Juarez. Granted, Cesar Juarez was just like not in any fighting shape, but I think that's potentially a route that they could go. But I mean, it's just overall, I think, tough with Inoue because these divisions that he's fighting in are kind of barren. And while there's a lot of guys at PBC, we just know that realistically, those fights aren't going to get made. Like, Top Rank's not going to offer up the money that could convince the PBC guys that it's worth going over there. And vice versa. I don't think PBC is going to say, oh, let's make this Inoue fight. Let's bring him over here because we've yet to see Top Rank guys like go over to PBC for a fight that wasn't from a purse bid. So I guess what I'm saying is Inoue chose a really bad time to come to the U.S. because it just so happened that when he came over to the U.S., PBC had already decided that they were going to try to make something happen with 118 and 122. So, I mean, I wouldn't want to be the person making decisions about Inoue's career. I mean, overall, it was a good win, and, like, it was to be expected. Although, I thought he was a little tentative. I thought he was just going to walk Maloney down, but instead he boxed a little bit, and I thought his eye looked all right. That was the main concern I had for this fight, because I had no concern at all that he was going to lose this fight. I thought both Maloney's are not very good at all. But I was concerned that if he got touched up a little bit, is that eye going to start swelling up? And it looked like it held up. I'm still concerned, and I'll look for that every fight that he has from here on out. But that will be where my concern is with Inoue, is like literally I don't think that there's anybody at 118 that can beat him. The only thing that's going to get in his way is somebody messing with that eye, and you know, should that swell up or something, that changes how he fights. Maybe he can't see or something, and like that's like a whole other thing.
He's in such a weird position. To your point, I'm not sure, like, where do you go with his future? And it's tough. He's pretty, like, I say he's on the younger side. He's not like young, but
Inoue is 27, but he's also fighting. He started his career at 108 pounds. So typically guys start to decline right around when they hit 30. There are some exceptions to the rule, like someone like Rigondeaux, who I wouldn't be shocked if he was 59.
73.
And Donaire. But I'm not too sure. Donaire is a real interesting case because he's moved up and down in weight. And he also appears to have ridiculous power in his left hand that has not left him. So, I don't know. I mean, it was a great knockout. Everything that I know about Inoue was true. It was on display in full on Saturday night. And now my concern is like, okay, can they, like, okay, they're trying to make him into a star. All right, fine. But how you make a guy into a star, unless you want them to be like the Golovkin type of star where it's like, okay, he can pull like an okay rating. Actually, not even Golovkin level. But like, there are guys who it's like, okay, well, hardcore fans are tuning in and they're excited about him. But like, we're also not building towards anything. And I think in boxing, you always have to build towards something. You got to have some fight on the horizon. And right now, Casemiro is not going to do it. I mean, it might for some people, but like, I don't know, maybe I'm just like overly critical and negative about Casemiro, but I don't think that fight is big whatsoever.
No, I agree with you. I mean, it's like a fun night for like boxing Twitter, but like, it's like a one night stand of boxing. Like, you have it and it's like the moment is like, oh, this is nice. And then like when you're trying to send this person home, it's like, I don't know about that. And I hope that like comparison is like not inappropriate, but it'd be cool fight. Casemiro talk a little trash. He'll spice it up. But
that was,
once it's over,
a wild
is it
little analogy there, but okay, we'll move on. All right, should we talk about the fact that AB's back in the slammer?
Oh,
or was
it honestly makes me sad, man. Like, AB seems like a really good guy that can't escape like some of his bad habits. Sucks.
Yeah, I mean, everyone likes to laugh at Broner and stuff like that. And it's kind of hard because Broner's doing some things that are like genuinely laughable, but at the same time, he's also doing things and being funny about them. Like telling the judge that he has $13 and that's all he's got. And like 2 days before, he was on Instagram with a video showing a massive amount of cash. Is, you know, it's funny, but at the same time, it's like, okay, dude, you at some point you want to like not be having legal troubles. And the shame is that for all everything that we know, Broner is probably coming back in January of next year. The fight with Ivan Redkak is perfect and it's going to sell. They've already got a beef that's been carrying on that started with, I think, Tank and now is gone off onto with and included Adrian Broner. And clearly we know that the plan is for, well, I don't know that it's clear, but I think the plan is Progre will ultimately fight Adrian Broner. And if Broner can't sort these legal issues out, which I think he can, but it definitely doesn't make those fights easy. So, I mean, I don't really have much else to say on this.
No, I'll throw in, like, granted, Adrian can get out of this situation so he could train. It may only make his next fight bigger. Because for a guy like Broner, controversy isn't necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah. I just think, like, on a non-boxing level, at some point, this is going to be real bad.
Yeah, I root for it to not get there. Because, like, you look around the boxing community. You watch these YouTube interviews, and everyone swears by AB. Like Paulie swears by him. Tank swears by him. Steven Espinosa seems to swear by him. Like, he's really liked amongst the people who matter in boxing. But, you know, for I think a guy like AB, he needs more fights. And not, like, because he needs the money. I mean, I'm sure the money won't hurt. But, like, when he's not locked in on something... You know, how's the saying go? The idle hand is the devil's playground, I believe. Is that correct?
I've never heard it before, but that sounds about
something
right.
Along those lines, it's just basically like when you're bored, you're going to get into trouble. And for someone coming off a Pacquiao fight that did pretty good pay-per-view numbers, I'm sure had a lot of money and a lot of free time. So this is what we get.
Yes. Every time I'm bored is when I go to 7-Eleven and buy Extends.
I like how you bought that back. That was good.
Well, we'll move on from AB and we will talk about the Oscar Valdez and Miguel Burchelt fight, which was rumored to be alleged to have been taking place on December 12th. And that does not appear to be the case. It appears that Miguel Burchelt has got COVID, and so the fight is going to be off. First of all, you know, hopefully Burchelt is okay. You know, given he's young, we believe that short term he should recover and be okay. And at some point next year, they will reschedule that fight. Now, what I find interesting is how many fighters are willing to step in and say, "I'll fight Oscar Valdez." Even Shakur Stevenson, is that the one that you see?
Correct.
Do you like that fight?
Yeah, I mean, you know, my thing with Shakur is like, he's an Olympic medalist. He's got a tremendous amount of hype. And I don't necessarily, like, I feel like it's time for him to take like a jump up in opposition. And so, like, I would definitely be down for that fight. You know, I see all the people his age taking jumps.
Except and, like, Devin.
That is true. Devin is like, and I'm disappointed in Devin for that. Like, I want to see, like, I would have loved the Fortuna fight. I thought that would have been perfect for Devin.
Nah, but his dad is over here trying to fight Gary Russell. Think of how ass backwards that is.
Should we play the clip, bro?
I mean, you could give your take. I got to find it.
How ass backwards that is? You know, I think Bill is one of those guys who, you know, he's doing his best Eddie Hearn impression. And on one hand, it's cool. It gets a lot of attention. But if you don't deliver the goods, it's irrelevant. So he, you know, Bill did a good job of like creating hype around his son and getting his son visibility. but he didn't deliver. And now we're getting a fight that's not, you know, so exciting. So to get back to Shakur, though.
You're going to tell Dirt, you're going to tell Bone, you're going to tell all them niggas, thoroughbred niggas in the city, that I would send some fake shit to you, cuzzo?
Who the fuck is them niggas?
That is like an all-time clip.
Gary's response will like I may use that years down the line. And people probably won't know what I'm talking about, and I could say the whole thing, but I'll know where it's coming from.
So I am going to disagree with you in a sense. I hate Shakur versus Oscar Valdez. I hate it. I hate it. Anybody who likes that fight, I don't like you. And I'll tell you why. It's real simple. It's nothing personal. I would rather watch Oscar Valdez fight Miguel Burchell than I would rather watch any Shakur Stevenson fight at this point. Like, really. I know, as a fan of Oscar Valdez, and he's one of the few fighters that I would say I'm a fan of, as a fan of Oscar Valdez, I know he's going to lose to Miguel Burchell. I also know that he's going to lose to Shakur Stevenson. Fine. If he's going to lose, though, I prefer if it would be in the Fight of the Year candidate. And let's be real. As much as Shakur needs the win, as much as it would do for Shakur Stevenson's career, and I'm not disputing any of that, it's not going to be a fun fight. Like, Oscar Valdez is going to get outboxed. It's pretty simple how that plays out. Unless, and I don't think this is the case whatsoever, unless Shakur Stevenson is nowhere near as good as he's looked against the opposition that he's fought thus far. I don't believe that's the case. I believe what I've seen, that Shakur Stevenson is legit. It's possible that he's not. Of course, I'm not going to rule that out. I'm not stupid. We've been fooled many times before by Olympic gold medalists or guys with great amateur pedigrees or guys who just have fought a bunch of guys that they were supposed to beat. And then when they wound up stepping up, oh, lo and behold, there are some massive flaws in their game that would never have been exposed fighting the lower level of opposition. That's possible for Shakur Stevenson. I don't believe it to be the case. I think he beats Oscar Valdez. I think he also beats Miguel Burchell. Burchell's another guy who, you know, say what you want. I'm not super high on Miguel Burchell. I get what you guys all see. Cool. But, like, I ain't gambling on Miguel Burchell unless he's
really
fighting.
I was just about to ask if you believe in the myth of Burchell.
No. So
we're not myth, but whatever. Perception.
I always kind of struggle, like, so we, you know, for those of you who are listening on the main feed, the only way you can listen to this is on our main feed. We have two feeds for the podcast. We have this main feed, and then we have the Patreon feed. The Patreon feed is, like, shorter podcasts more frequently, and I try to not repeat takes on either one. So I'm always trying to make sure that while I may stay, you know, consistent, I may, you know, that doesn't mean I change my opinion on things, but I try not to repeat myself. And so I've said, I can't remember if I've repeated it here or I've said it in the past, my take on Burchell or on if I've done it on the other podcast. It's most likely I did it on the other podcast. But I mean, to briefly summarize, Miguel Burchell to me has fought basically nobody in his career. And you could say, well, he beat like Francisco Vargas. Like, Francisco Vargas already, like, the signs and symptoms were already there that he was done. Done. And so I don't give him much credit for beating Francisco Vargas. Like, I don't, first of all, never really consider Francisco Vargas to be a top guy. And since then, like, Burchelt has fought a lot of guys that have not been too good. And I'll include Takashi Miura in that mix. Miura was always considered a B-level guy at super featherweight, who was secondary to Takashi Uchiyama, who was the king of the entire division for a while. Takashi Miura just was never that guy. So I don't really believe in Burchell like that. Now, I do think, that's not to say that I don't think Burchell is good. I don't think that he's like this, like, without question, top guy in the division. I think I'm more willing to say that Shakur Stevenson at 130 is better than Burchell than I am to say that Burchell is better than everybody at 130, which I don't believe is the case. Now, I do think that Burchell, just style-wise, is good for Valdez in the sense that Burchell's going to beat him. So, I mean, that's how I feel about that. But I think Burchell and Oscar Valdez are going to give a great fight. I mean, you disagree with that or anything?
No, I mean, I do disagree with your take on Burchelt a little bit. I was watching a couple of YouTube fights of his.
You're watching
fights
some from tape.
What's that?
You're watching tape, huh?
Listen, man, I'm trying to be better on my research game. YouTube is there for a reason, and it's useful. And, man, I like Burchelt's offense. You know, it'll obviously look a bit different when he's in there with a live body, but I think it's legit. I think there's a reason why you never heard Lomachenko and Burchelt in conversations, and it's not very often that you hear Shakur and Burchelt in conversations. I think that, you know, I don't want to give him like the killer tag, but I think he's like more real than he is fake. I'm not sure they make a Shakur Burchelt fight anytime soon, before getting Shakur a bit more seasoning.
All right,
IMO.
That's an interesting take. I didn't expect it from you, but I'm happy to hear it. I don't agree. I mean, that's all I'm going to say. I don't agree. I think Shakur beats him. Now, I think, and I say this all the time, power is very intoxicating. Very, very intoxicating. And frequently in boxing, we see power get conflated for skill. And they are not the same thing.
Oh, they're definitely not. But the one thing that like intrigues me about the matchup of Burchelt and Shakur is Shakur is like a baby still. And like he's what, 22, right?
Yeah.
22 to a guy that is what, like 28? Is it 28? I'm like trying to check on BoxRec right now. 28, 37-1, 33 KOs, like that. Just his belief in himself going into a fight with Shakur, like it'll be a real, like if Shakur is really the goods, him winning that fight would be a huge win. But if he got like clipped and it didn't go so well, that'd be like devastating. And it's like, there's no point like in making that fight for top rank in my view. And it's not even like I'm talking about this, like this was the point of the, like where we started off at. It's not, but I don't know. I don't know. Burchelt is like, I think he's dangerous. Not super dangerous, but like you want to move him right and move people around him correctly too.
I wouldn't be shocked if you were right. Like I'm not like super, I'm not going to sit here and argue with you about that. I think it's a fair point of view. I just don't necessarily, I think I'm more likely to be right than you.
We'll keep an eye on this one. Because again, like, based on his matchmaking, it could turn out that he's, like, phony.
Which I anticipate is the case. All right. So, this weekend we have... I mean, I don't know how to put this. Saturday, Luis Ortiz is going to fight Alexander Flores, and Devin Haney is going to fight Uriarkus Gamboa. Which one is going to be more competitive?
Oh, my God. That's such a crazy question. Which one is going to be more competitive?
Yeah.
I guess I'm going to go with Gamboa versus Haney.
You're wrong. You're wrong.
Why? Tell me why I'm wrong.
All right. This is really simple. And like, if you watched the Stanionis card today, this is like, just should be slapping you in the face. Cordell Booker looked good.
I don't want to say bad, but he looked very not sharp. He looked dull.
Okay, you know, if Devin Haney is gonna come in as like a boning knife, you know, Cordell Booker came in looking like a butter knife. Like that's how dull this was. Like he tore his Achilles, and it changed him completely. You saw what David Haye looked like, you know, after he tore his Achilles against Tony Bellew. Like it just. He couldn't move. There was nothing on his punches.
Achilles is one of the worst injuries you could sustain as a pro athlete. It completely ruins your mobility.
And Booker looked bad tonight. He got a majority decision. But like we were talking about one of the better prospects at 154 prior to tearing his Achilles. a guy who clearly could have been in contention for titles, not necessarily winning them, but he was going to be in the mix as a top contender for a while. Like, he looked like he, like Terrell Gachet, like he could have been at minimum a Gachet level fighter. And no power, nothing on his punches today, plodded around the ring. He was able to be active early in the fight to rack up a few rounds so that he could scrape out that majority decision. But the mid rounds, he looked really bad. He was almost, or could have been stopped.
He got hurt. I think it's fair to say he got hurt a couple times.
Yeah, and I think that's 100% due to the fact that he had torn his Achilles. Just could not move around the ring. And now you take Gamboa, who's a probably 39-year-old lightweight, who is 5'4". In his last fight, people like to say that he was like Tank underperformed in that fight, but people forget that Tank might have underperformed, but he still beat the hell out of Gamboa. Gamboa didn't win like a round, maybe. So he was dropped three times in that fight. Now
he also didn't fight at all in that fight. Like, he didn't never put like take any risks to like mix it up or anything.
I legitimately remember him only landing four punches in that fight. And I'm being serious. And so coming off of that, seeing Cordell Booker tonight, knowing what I know about Achilles tears from the NBA, which is a sport that has a lot of similar type of movement in boxing, lateral movement, things like that. And he's 38 years old with old legs. Like, I think Devin Haney, like, is, if he does not knock Gamboa out really quickly, that is a red flag about Devin Haney, because I can't imagine Gamboa is going to be even anything close to what he was when he fought Tank and what he was against Tank. You know, we know that that's not the Gamboa that was like knocking out knocking out guys like Jorge Solis and Rogers Magawa, like that, you know, also that was like 10 years ago, but still. I don't know. I think this is going to be a destruction.
I also think that Devin is a 140 pounder.
He thinks that.
I don't know. Huh?
He thinks that.
Right.
Devin is fairly big. He's listed at 5'8". In all of his pictures that he took when he was with Floyd, he was about the same size as Floyd. So yeah, I wouldn't be shocked, you know, if this was his last fight at 135. And especially if he's not going to be able, and all signs indicate that he's not going to get Teofimo, he's probably not going to get the winner of Ryan Garcia and Luke Campbell. Why stay at 135?
Well, I think it's like an interesting topic that will probably be better to be discussed on another day. But where does Devin Haney go? Danny Jacobs, Triple G, if things start changing at the zone.
That all depends on, when it is. I don't know. That's a very tricky conversation. That is a fun one and it's a long one, but yeah, we're not going to discuss that today.
Yeah. Different day. And I only brought it up because you mentioned, Devin and, Teofimo.
Now, with regard to the Luis Ortiz fight, now, obviously, you guys are all boxing fans. I expect you guys to watch both cards, okay? You are hardcore boxing fans. We live in the era of DVRs, and there's the app allows you to watch after the fact. So I expect you guys to watch all these fights. And in this scenario, where Luis Ortiz is fighting Alexander Flores, Flores is like an okay heavyweight. His picture looks like he works at H&R Block. But putting that aside, Luis Ortiz is the one coming off of the devastating knockout. He's the one that's 41 years old. So like there's a lot that is working against Ortiz in this fight. Now, granted, Ortiz is falling from a height wherever he was at his prime. I don't know where he was at his prime, but we know that he's on the decline. And wherever that is, he's still likely to be better than Alexander Flores, wherever Alexander Flores is. This could be the best night of Alexander Flores' life, and very likely the fall from grace for Luis Ortiz is still going to be higher than Flores. But if it's not quite, if he's fallen enough, this could be interesting. This could be a underwhelming performance for Luis Ortiz. I would be more willing to gamble on Ortiz getting old and getting caught by a heavyweight than I am Devin Haney either being outboxed by Gamboa or caught by Gamboa. I just 100% don't see that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I was thinking about it from the perspective of how Luis Ortiz can make a fight very dull until it's, like, over. Like the, who did he fight in Staples Center?
Travis Kaufman.
No, not Kaufman, because this, I'm thinking of someone he stopped in, like, two or three rounds.
Razvan Kojanu?
Kojanu. It was like people were booing, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, it was over. And then everyone was cheering. And Ortiz has the ability to, like, you know, he'll be slow and measured, throw a jab to your body, mix it up a little bit. And then the second you make a mistake, he'll capitalize. But to your point, he's old. He's been out for a while. He's been knocked out brutally by Wilder twice. The second one in particular, he got punched in the face and fell downwards, not backwards, which is, like, to me, a bad sign about your punch retention. So maybe he does get caught and it gets exciting. So good point.
Yeah. That was the Mikey Garcia, Robert Easter Jr. undercard where I was at that fight and I was like, wow, Ortiz like got a huge reception from the crowd that night. It was really shocking to hear the crowd embrace Ortiz. And that was like his first fight after losing to Wilder. Oh, that's a name I have not seen in a while. Okay. Anyway, that is all for this episode. We'll put a cap there. Again, Luis Ortiz fights on Fox this Saturday night. Devin Haney will fight on the app DAZN. And that's all that's from us today. If you want more content, you can head over to Sunday. No, not. Nope, that's not the right address. Patreon.com/SundayPuncher. We have an additional podcast there. And every episode before we hit record for this episode, we do a little pregame. We record our discussion there to, you know, it's supposed to be for planning, but sometimes it's just us getting warm. And today we spent like some time talking about music. So we'll talk about other things there in addition to boxing, or maybe we'll say, have some takes there that we don't want to say on the podcast, but maybe we want to say them there first. We'll say it over there. So if that's your thing, go subscribe. If not, you know, whatever, don't do that then. Leave a rating or review if that's something that you like to do. 5 stars, please. If you're going to leave anything less than 5 stars, let me know. Hit me up first and we could talk about it. And maybe, you know, you can help us craft the podcast so it is a 5-star podcast and not to be a 4-1, okay? I would appreciate that. Otherwise, you guys are all free to go. Thank you for listening. Lex, thanks for coming on. I hope you guys enjoyed it.